Welcome to this class on anger and humility. Here we analyze and discuss teachings from the sages who suggest that we can transform any anger we feel. The sages quoted here are Nachmanides, Rabbi Luzzatto, Rav Kook, and Rabbi Rieti. PDFs of their quoted texts can be downloaded from this website. Whenever we speak of God in this class or in all of Judaism, we're really speaking about the invisible consciousness of the entire universe, which is the support for all of life.
So what we're talking about is anger and how to overcome anger and how to recognize anger and heal ourselves from anger. So Nachmanides said to his son, accustom yourself to speak gently to all people at all times, and this will protect you from anger. That's a most serious character flaw which causes one to sin. So I looked into Rabbi Rieti writes about anger, and he makes it very interesting. I'll go over it briefly, where he talks about anger and he says, one kind of anger is a choice that we make to be angry. The fact about anger is that it hurts not only another person when we speak with anger, but it hurts us too. It affects us on the inside of ourselves when we speak with anger. So anger doesn't solve a problem. It doesn't
exacerbates it somehow.
Exactly. It creates less respect. It creates hurt. It distorts reality. It doesn't increase love. So what he says, this is Rabbi Rieti, says anger is a camouflage for intimacy. When people affect another person with anger, it's because they're keeping the other person at a distance.
Interesting.
Say the person with anger is a what?
Is a camouflage, a cover up for intimacy. So it. Oh, you're so kind. Thank you. So he says it's when we stop, when we don't want to look at ourselves, we want to blame other people for the problem. We say, you're doing this or you're doing that or I hate you or whatever the expression is of anger. It's to keep ourselves away from the intimacy of being our own self, our true self.
That makes us vulnerable.
Yeah. Yes, right. Then we have to admit that we're vulnerable, which everyone is anyway. And he also says it avoids intimacy with God. It stops us from, when we're angry with the world or we're angry at life, we're angry at the creation of life. We're angry at the experience of life. And when we understand that God is in everything all the time, then we're really angry with God. And that's not a bad thing. I'm just saying that this is what he's saying goes on. So that I'll just say one other thing and then we'll go into the other part of this. He said the sages say that you have to emulate the lion. Because out of all the cat family,
no.
The lion manages to stay within the family. The lion relates to the family. He said all the other animals in the cat family go off by themselves. Yeah. Like a tiger will go off by itself or panther will go off by itself. But he says the lion stays within the family. So he says, so be aware that when you're angry, you're separating yourself from other people in your family, in your friendship, in your business, in your work. So he's saying try to stay clear about the fact that you need to conquer this anger and learn how to overcome it. So that's what we're going to talk about now, is how to overcome it, because Nachmanides says when you distance yourself from anger, the quality of humility will enter your heart. So what I wanted to do was talk about humility, and we'll get an idea of what humility is, and then we'll understand how that will help us to not have anger. Now, another part, before I get into that, another part of anger that I know happens to people is an anger that people are carrying within themselves that is much deeper than just being angry at another person, you know. It's anger within themselves because they don't understand everything that's going on within themselves.
Right, I know someone like that. Yeah.
And right. They'll, absolutely. You know, you can say the wrong word and they'll suddenly be angry.
Yeah, like that. It's like crazy, it's like an illness, but this fermenting inside.
But there's something going on inside him. Yeah.
It's not called anger anymore.
Right, it's called rage. It's true. So rage is something that comes from hurt, comes from fear, comes from an experience that can't even be expressed. People who've been abused in childhood sometimes can't verbalize it because it happened when they were so young, they don't even know that it happened, or they've blocked it because they love their parents and they can't relate that love for their parents with the hurt that they have. So that kind of anger comes out in ways you don't even know where it comes from. A person doesn't even know where it comes from. So we have to respect that in a person and understand that they're in pain. It's really, they're expressing pain when they're showing that kind of anger. And it's almost as if we have to show compassion to someone like that. We don't have to take it on. And I've said this before in this class, where if someone is coming at you with anger, you don't have to accept that anger. They're transmitting their angry energy at you. You can, if you are centered, if you have learned to be centered within yourself, you don't have to be angry with them. You don't have to receive that anger. You can be clear in your mind. You don't even have to say anything. You just have to be clear in your mind that the person is trying to project their anger onto you. And you can say, I don't accept that anger.
Right.
And it will not come to you. I mean, it might try, and it's how much strength you've built within yourself that will help you to resist that kind of force that comes from people with anger. This is Rabbi Luzzatto. Heard of Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, who was around 1707 to 1746. He's a favorite of mine. He's brilliant. And this book was called The Path of the Just. And he writes about all different stages of the spiritual journey. And this is about humility. So actually, he discusses pride. And it reminds me, I wanted to tell you something also about pride, which is arrogance, which is a kind of anger. A friend of mine was very good looking, a gorgeous man, absolutely beautiful, gorgeous face. And when I was out with him sometimes, people would come up to me and say, he's so gorgeous. You know, it was just incredible. So I spoke to him about this and I said, you know, people are telling me how gorgeous you are. And he said, I know, he said. He had a right to know. I mean, he really was gorgeous. Okay. And he said, I have a problem with pride over this.
But why?
I feel very proud of my looks. God, that's what he was saying.
Well,
that's what I said to him.
It's so strange. I mean,
I don't think it's uncommon.
It's not uncommon. That's it. If a man is very good looking or a woman is very good looking, sometimes they'll carry it like, It's theirs. Like,
I think it's more of a protection. Like, let me see something at the door. Mm-hmm. It's like a security of, like, there's not enough inside, they feel. So it's like,
so I said to him, you know, you didn't create your looks. You didn't create who you are. So he took that under advisement, you know. But that's what it is with pride. We didn't create anything that we have. And, you know, God created your parents, so that's how you came to be who you are.
That's right.
And the psychology of your parents is how you have become who you are. They've influenced you.
I'm talking about self-growth you did acquire by yourself with God's help.
Right, like with that. God's help, right. Well, let's get into humility and we'll see.
Right.
We'll go a little deeper here. Okay. So Rabbi Zatu says, we go to the second paragraph because he wants to discuss humility. The essence of humility is in a person's not attaching importance to himself for any reasons whatsoever. This trait is the very opposite of pride, and its results are the very opposite of the results of pride. Analysis will reveal that humility is dependent upon thought and deed. Before a man conducts himself in the way of the humble, he must first be humble in thought. One who attempts to be humble in deeds without first having cultivated an attitude of humility belongs to that class of wicked, deceitful, humble men, class of hypocrites, that there is nothing more evil in the world. Now, why is he saying that? Do you know why he's saying that?
There's no room.
Well, people are pretending to be humble. They're acting humble without feeling humble. That's the deceit. Mm-hmm. That they're presenting themselves as if they're full of humility. They're presenting themselves as if they're really humble. But they don't feel it on the inside.
Well, it's got to come from somewhere.
No,
but they can put it on. You know, people can act in a way that they're humble.
Not only am I so wonderful and doing so many good things, but I'm humble as well.
That's impressive. But God gave you everything you
have. Right? Actually, I take issue with that because...
Why?
It's like, okay, take your friend. I am willing to bet you that you change his personality to... I'm guessing he's somewhat self-confident, am I right?
Yeah.
At least somewhat self-confident.
Yeah.
You change his personality into someone who's very unconfident, and people are going to not think he's quite as good looking. Like, some of that is coming from his own projections, like projecting whatever he is, his confidence.
Yeah, but the way you present yourself, well, let's keep going with this because it'll come out, you'll see. So now he's going to explain the divisions, okay? Humility in thought consists in a person's reflecting upon and recognizing as a truth the fact that he does not deserve praise and honor, let alone elevation above his fellow men. Both because of his natural limitations and because of his accumulated defects. So he's saying, nobody's perfect. We all have to understand that no one is perfect, so we're not necessarily better than other people. We're all only human. My mother used to say, we're no better, no worse than anyone else. So just stay, you know, clear on that, okay? So he's saying, as far as natural limitations are concerned, it is obvious that it is impossible for any man, regardless of the level of perfection he's reached, to be without many faults, whether because of his own nature, because of his family and relatives, because of certain experiences he's had, or because of his deeds. He's saying all of these are defects in a person, which allows no room at all for the feeling of self-importance, For though he may possess many virtues, these faults suffice to overshadow them. So no matter how good you are in so many different areas, you're, as my mother would say, no better, no worse than anyone else. You're still only human. This is a very important thing to understand. You're only human. You are not God. And I believe this is a big thing in Judaism, that you're not required, you can't see yourself as God, all right? However, Judaism always says that we carry the divine spark within us. So it's a balance of these two things. So, and Hasidus says this very interestingly. There's one story where they say a person has to carry two notes, one in one pocket, one in the other. You heard this one? Where one, you are the greatest, where the whole world is made for you, and in the other pocket,
you came from nothing.
You came from nothing. You're like dust.
You're going to nothing.
Yeah, you're like dust.
What your body is.
And you have to learn when to be in one state or the other state. But there is a balance to all of this, okay? All right? So the fact that that is responsible more than any other for a person's coming to feel self-important and proud is wisdom. This is so because wisdom is a superior quality of the person himself, a function of his most honored faculty, intelligence. But there is no sage who will not err and will not need to learn from the words of his friends and very often even from those of his disciples. How then can he pride himself in his wisdom? In truth, one who is possessed of an honest intelligence, even if he has managed to become a toweringly great sage, will see when he looks into the matter that there is no room at all for pride and self-importance. For a man of intelligence, one who knows more than others, acts only according to the dictates of his nature, as it is natural for a bird to fly, and as it is dictated for an ox to pull with his strength. One is wise only because his nature has led him to be so. And that's what we were talking about with nature and coming from your parents. You know, you learn from your parents. It's your kind of behavior. It's your character that makes you who you are, and you didn't make your character either. So we'll get there. You'll see. Okay, so he says, there is no place then for self-importance and pride in respect to wisdom. Rather, if one possesses much wisdom, he is duty-bound to impart it to those in need of it. As stated by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, if you have learned much Torah, do not take credit for it, for you were created to do so. So you were created with the intelligence to study. You were created with the curiosity to learn it and to overcome the difficulties that you're confronted with.
Not only that.
So you're created to do this. You're created to be this. There's nothing in us that isn't created by God. That's what I said before. But it's your nature, your intelligence, the ability, the skill to be able to overcome the difficulties and to improve yourself. It all comes from God. Everything comes from God. So he's saying, one who is wealthy may rejoice in his lot, but at the same time he must help those in need. If one is strong, he must assist the weak and rescue the oppressed. The situation, as Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach used to say, those who are rich are given money so that they can share it with others, because all the money comes from God anyway. So if one is strong, he must assist the weak and rescue the oppressed. The situation is analogous to that of a household where there are different servants assigned to different tasks, and where each servant must fulfill his appointed task if the affairs and requirements of the household are to all be attended to. In truth, there is no place for pride here. So he's saying, whatever you have, whatever you think you have, it's come from God. It's not something that you can say, I did this. When in fact, in the physical world, you did do things. You know, you have accomplished things. And it's not to beat you down to make you feel small. God forbid. It's not about that. It's about you understanding that you have a partner in life. And that partner is God.
I want to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens if you have like low self-esteem, like you are always comparing yourself to others, and I mean, that's, I know that like it's part of pride in a way, even though it's unfair to yourself.
It's insecurity is also an arrogance.
Yeah, so how do you not compare yourself to others when you see others mm-hmm. who are like really special and then you forget your own, and then you're like you start to compare and then you lose your own grounding, which is you're not supposed to do that. So how do you stop yourself?
Grow in your own self. Get more aware of your own gifts. Tune into your own gifts. Tune into what God has given you, because God has given you gifts. Each person has been given gifts. Meditate on those gifts. Ask God to show you those gifts, because God is the consciousness that's always present. Always present. There's not a moment without God. Couldn't be. So God is always here to help us. So this concept of humility is not to make you weak. It's not to make you feel small. It's to center you in a way that allows you to be in relationship with God. To understand that you're here as a conscious being, and God is the greatest consciousness, and you can be empowered and made more wise by God's wisdom. That's the gift. That's what Judaism is all about, that we're learning to understand there is this higher consciousness, and it is in a state of oneness at all times. So we are part of this oneness. We are part of this consciousness. The more we tune into it, the more empowered we become. That can't be done with arrogance. It has to be the humility of realizing that God is the great consciousness, and we are made in the image of this consciousness. We are a reflection of this consciousness. But it's not to make us feel small. It's, in fact, it can make you feel really great. And I've been saying to people for years now, this is not a time to just be a good person. You have to be a great person. You have to learn about the greatness inside of you, the divine greatness inside of you, and the gifts that God's given you. And when you combine the greatness of God with the gifts you've been given, you become empowered. But it's not an arrogant empowerment. It's an empowerment of knowing. You know who you are. You're centered in yourself. And you come to a point where you feel like you fill your own skin. And so there's no embarrassment about being yourself. There's no shyness about being yourself. There's no anger about being yourself. You've centered yourself on the understanding that God has given you the gift of being yourself. Now, this is not so easy to come to, obviously, because most of the world doesn't do this. But it's something that...
You mean most of the world doesn't do what?
To compare themselves, right?
To center themselves and become self-centered. Not self-centered, but self-aware. The opposite of self-centered.
Right, right, right.
Self-aware. Aware of the higher self.
Well, more so maybe over the last 20 years where there's been a whole kind of movement towards this kind of consciousness.
Yeah, people are coming
to
that.
You're this or whatever.
Right, right. Oh, those... Yeah. However, I'm saying that the majority of the people in the world don't have this. And that's why the world is in the state it's in. If people are centered and happy about who they are, if they are aware that they're in partnership with God in their life, in their whole life, then they're not going to be arrogant. They're not going to be harmful to others. And there's going to be peace. But it's going to take... I don't know how much effort it's going to take, but the more people who become centered and become aware that they have to live with humility, the more peaceful the world will be. And that's true of Israel. When people in Israel are centered, I always bring this in because it drives me crazy that there are Orthodox Jews and there are non-Orthodox Jews, and somehow they can't get it together.
Right.
Because they're not, you know, whether they're religious or not. Because it's not a one-size-fits-all religion. Judaism is definitely, that's why I love it so much, because it's everyone is unique and everyone is treated as unique. You have to have, this is the ultimate goal, the messianic goal is for each person to have their own relationship with God, their own personal relationship with God. So there's no, you know, there's no uniform set of how you need to relate to God. The laws are the structure to help you as you go through the spiritual journey. Because when you are really on a spiritual journey, when you are relating to God, you can lose your balance sometimes because it's very intense. To be in relationship with God is to have to, in a way, let go of what you've already known and trust God. And this is something that's major that I wouldn't go into in this group, but there are some people who understand this. You have to let go of everything.
That's right, I've heard that, yes.
And
if you need to.
And no, as far as God's concerned, it's a question of
what?
Let go of what you've known.
Oh, I think that let go of what?
No. Okay. Let go of what you've known in the physical world and trust that God will take you through challenges.
Oh.
And God, you know, the children of Israel went out of Egypt, they went into the wilderness.
Okay.
They had to trust God at every step. They
and
didn't know what
God.
Was going to happen.
Money comes from God.
Money comes from God.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's stick to humility at this point, because
yes.
Then we're finding out. So getting in touch with the understanding that we're not, we didn't create who we are. We didn't make who we are. God made who we are. God gave us our intelligence. God gave us our skills. God gave us our bodies, our minds, our health, our everything. And we use it to the best of our ability. So, to get back to what you said about my friend, and the fact that, yes, to a certain extent, he was expressing himself and making himself that attractive. But at the same time, when a person is centered in relationship with God, that has a greater beauty because it's not superficial in any way. His pride in his looks was of surface matter. When you are centered on your relationship with God, then there's not so much
me.
There's not so much arrogance of the self, the person, as a complete human being in relationship with God that comes through. And you might have seen this. I don't know if you've met holy people, people who are really centered in relationship with God, they don't come across as arrogant. They don't come across as flashy in any way. They can shine anyway.
Actually, with a lot of the more like old school rabbis, where they talk about it like Yiras Shamayim, where it's like they're very grounded in their tradition, and you can really see it like beyond the black and white clothing, you can see something there.
Yes, that's it. And that's what I'm talking about. And if you know, they'll hide behind these beards and all of that, but underneath they're gorgeous. Okay. And this is Rob Cook. So he says, one cannot merit the achievement of humility except through cleaving to God. It is appropriate for one who is qualified for true cleaving to God, he says, to wear tefillin, often. There you go. Then he will truly be filled with humility. Well, the thing is, when you put on tefillin, you're meditating, right? You're meditating when you put on tefillin? Hi. Come on in. Yeah. So we've been through a lot of this, but you can join in. So it's about being close to God. So when humility, this is something else that's important, number seven. When humility affects depression, it is defective. So that's what I said before. Humility is not to make you feel small. It's not to make you suffer and hurt inside. If it brings on depression, it's defective. Because it's not meant to do that to you. When it is genuine, it inspires joy, courage, and inner dignity. That's what I'm talking about, Moshe. That's what I'm talking about with the lack of pride. It's the inner dignity that people carry, and that's what makes them feel close to God. Okay?
Kavod.
Yes. At times, it is. Now, this is something else, so this is important. Eight. At times, it is not necessary to be afraid of greatness, which inspires a person to do great things. And this is what I was saying before. All humility is based on such holy greatness. So humility is not a bad thing. It's not a weak thing at all. It's aligning ourselves with God, realizing that God is giving us what we need, and acknowledging that to ourselves so that we don't come off as arrogant or angry or prideful. But we know we have this, we walk around with a sense of relationship with God. That's so important. And then we can become great. But it's not greatness that comes with arrogance attached to it. It comes with a sense of humility and, as he says, dignity. I like that. Inner dignity. And he says, on number nine, from the time one begins to suffer with feelings of haughtiness, one gathers strength to overcome the evil traits rooted in feelings of self-depreciation and to infuse a spark of life to the refined intelligence. One then combines the traits of humility and self-depreciation and their good qualities with the benefits extracted from the unclean trait of pride. So he's also talking about pride. And if you do become haughty, he says, look into who you really are, you know, come into humility. And he says self-depreciation. I don't really like that term, but to not make yourself arrogant so that you can extract yourself from the unclean trait of pride. So it's an interesting balance there. And one is called on to invest much effort in clinging to humility. When a thought of pride or a feeling of self-exaltation arises in the person, it is for him to apply the good aspect of these sensibilities to reinforce the will to holiness, which is so beautiful, to come into this, because then you do become holy. Okay? And that's what God wants from us. God says, I am holy. You shall be holy because I am holy. That's what God says. Right? While the negative aspect, let him discard with loathing. So get rid of the negative aspect of it. Then he will add to his feeling of humility, and he will always be in joy and in gladness of heart in a continued feast. From everything he will receive the refined element, wrung from the depths where our moral dispositions are rooted, similar to the pressing of grapes. It's very common in Judaism to talk about this, so as to make the wine that rejoices the human heart. It's often said that Jews are like grapes, we're being squeezed to get all the goodness out.
The wine.
And become wine. Mm. And he talks about humility and true lowliness enhance one's health and strength, while the spurious forms of these virtues enfeeble and depress. That's why I'll say to people, if you get depressed while you're in relationship with God, there's something missing. Because the relationship with God gives you joy, If you don't find that joy, no matter what you're going through, if you don't find that joy, then you have to question your relationship with God. You have to look more deeply within yourself. A person must therefore choose for himself the qualities of humility and lowliness in their enlightened form, that he may grow stronger and sturdier. Those who trust in the Lord will renew their strength. Okay? Anybody have any questions
on
that?
What happens like when like something happens that seems negative and it's straight from God? I know what you're supposed to do.
What?
You're supposed to like say it's all for the best, it'll turn out good, God's loving me, blah blah blah. No. Okay.
Well, that's one part of it, but it's also to say God is teaching me something.
Oh, okay.
Because we're really learning from God at every moment. Everything that blocks us is a lesson to us to learn, to grow, to become more aware of who we are, to become more aware of who God is, to become more aware of how to relate to other people. God's always teaching us. God is like a loving parent. And if we bump into something, it's because we don't understand how to stay in the smooth flow of harmony that God has created. And it doesn't mean you're wrong when you do this. It's that's why we're here. We're here as conscious beings to learn how to live in relationship with God. So God is always teaching us every step of the way. So one way, yes, I know people say, you just say, God did it.
It doesn't work for me.
No, of course it wouldn't work.
Well, like what I said, it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't work.
Because you don't know the reason.
That's it. But okay. Once you understand,
but it's to learn from.
It's
then you
to learn
it.
From. Oh. Yeah. Then you take it as a lesson and you understand this. And I know some people, when a teacher says, even in a classroom, when a teacher says something negative, they get very upset, they get hurt, their emotions are in pain, and they can't handle it, and they start getting angry with the teacher. But if they look at the teacher and say, that teacher is teaching me something, if they think that the teacher is really teaching them something in the long run, and they look at it in that way, they will learn something. If you get emotionally involved and it hurts, then you're not going to get anywhere. So I've had that where teachers in architecture, you know, when I was studying architecture, a teacher would pull my design apart at the beginning of a class. It was early stages, I have to admit. And I admire this teacher greatly. He was a terrific teacher. And he pulled it apart. He said, this doesn't work. Why have you done this? Why have you done that? He said it nicely, but clearly he was pulling it apart and demolishing the whole design. And I listened and I learned. And I had other students come up to me afterwards and say, why aren't you in tears? And I said, because what he was saying taught me so much. I respect him. I admire his work. He's a terrific architect. Why wouldn't I learn from him? So he was right. What he was saying was right.
He probably wouldn't have done that to you if he didn't respect the fact that you had something in that he wanted to refine, right? If he thought someone was really bad, I mean, he would have found a different way to...
No, it was really bad. It was really bad.
But you didn't think you were really bad.
No, he didn't say I was really bad.
Right.
He was talking about my design.
Right, I'm saying if he thought the person was hopeless, it would have been something different.
Yeah.
You are hopeless.
Exactly, but it's not even a question of who I am. It was that he was doing this to teach me. That was the thing. And I've been in situations where I've studied in a class with somebody else and he was saying he couldn't stand the teacher, he hated the teacher. I said, but the teacher knows what he's talking about. It's not your relationship with the teacher, it's your relationship with the information that teacher is giving you that's going to benefit you. And in the case of God, God is a teacher who's loving you. You may not know that at some points. It may not feel like that at some points, but God is always teaching you and always loving you. So you come to a point where it becomes a reality for you. And then you can walk with that and live with that and relate to other people with that. And it's a very beautiful way of experiencing life.